So first of all, what one breaks through. Well, what does one have to break through? In principle, one has to break through everything which is mundane, everything which is conditioned, everything which is, as it were, of this world, everything which is part and parcel of the samsara, everything which represents a segment or a spoke or an aspect of the wheel of life. One has to break through, burst through all this. But this, though true, is too general. The mundane, the conditioned, the samsara, has so many different aspects. And these different aspects of the samsara are like so many thick, so many impenetrable veils, like so many barriers, like so many roadblocks, like so many, as I said, great boulders piled high in our path. And all of these have to be broken through. And this evening I'm going to discuss just four of the more important blockages, four of the more important aspects of the conditioned, of the mundane, which have to be broken through if Buddhahood is to be attained. First of all, negative emotions. Secondly, psychological conditionings. Thirdly, rational thinking. Fourthly, time sense. All of these have to be broken through if we are to get anywhere near Buddhahood. First of all, the negative emotions. Now, more than once in the past, we've had occasion to speak about these, especially in their verbal manifestations. So what are they? In their primary form, the negative emotions are three in number. There's craving in the sense of neurotic desire, there's hatred, and there's fear. These are the three primary forms of the negative emotions. But there are very many secondary and tertiary forms. There's anxiety, a sort of diffused fear. There's insecurity, there's jealousy, there's self-pity, guilt, remorse, contempt, conceit, envy, depression, pessimism, gloom, alarm, despondency, despair, suspicion, resentment. Now, I don't want to say too much about them because over preoccupation with negative emotions is itself likely to generate negative emotions. So I'm not going to say very much about them at all. But they certainly have certain characteristics in common, as we've seen on other occasions. All these negative emotions represent leakages, drainages of emotional energy. When we indulge in negative emotions, whether in their primary, their secondary, their tertiary forms, energy, psychical energy, even spiritual energy, is draining away from us in all directions all the time. And indulgence in the negative emotions, therefore, weakens us. And this causes us to withdraw into ourselves. If you haven't got much energy, you don't want to give up. If you're weakened, if you've lost energy, you tend to withdraw into yourself, to contract. So the negative emotions cause us to contract into what we may describe as a cold, hard, tight knot of separative selfhood. This is the effect of indulging constantly, persistently in negative emotions. And unfortunately, we may say that the negative emotions are extremely widespread. They're practically all pervasive. And it seems to be the special function of several ubiquitous agencies to intensify the negative emotions as much as possible. Take, for instance, the daily newspaper. You see many newspapers specializing in the sensational, the horrible, the shocking. If there's a good, juicy murder, this is just what they love to get hold of, and they gloat over it page after page. In this way, negative emotions are stimulated. And then there's the advertising industry, a very large, a very important, a very powerful industry. Its special function seems to be to stimulate neurotic craving, to multiply people's wants, not to meet their needs, but to multiply their wants. And then we find that most of the people that we meet, outside, of course, our own movement, I hope, are negative rather than positive in their emotional attitudes and their emotional responses. You get from most people a negative rather than a positive feeling if one moves in ordinary society. So we have to be very careful not to allow ourselves to be influenced, not to be tinged ourselves with this grey, negative, emotional attitude. We have to break through all this, burst through all this, into a positive emotional state, a state of love, a state of faith and devotion, a state of compassion, a state of joy. And we should try, we should do our best to encourage positive emotions, positive attitudes in other people. Now, secondly, psychological conditionings. These two are something to be broken through. Psychological conditionings. But what are they? Psychological conditionings may be defined as factors which influence, even determine, our mental attitudes and our behavior without our being fully aware of it, or perhaps without our being aware of it at all. Suppose, for instance, we are born in this country, born in England. We're naturally brought up speaking the English language, unless of course we're born in Wales. We're educated at an English school. We are inevitably exposed to all the rigours of the English climate. And all this will affect our influence, it will affect our outlook very, very deeply indeed, and without our knowing it, without our being aware of it. And it will result in an English psychological conditioning rather than in, say, a French or a Chinese psychological conditioning. The net result will be, the practical upshot will be, that we shall see everything, we shall look out upon the world as an Englishman. We shall see things from that special point of view. When, for instance, say, the Battle of Waterloo is mentioned, we shall at once think of victory. We won't think of defeat. And we shall think it natural to see things as an Englishman. We'll take it for granted. That is the way of seeing them. That's how things are. We shan't think, well, this is how I see things just because I'm an Englishman. We shall think, well, this is how things are. This is the way that things are. And we might even think it's right and proper that things should be as they are. And we may even be rather surprised when we one day perhaps wake up to the fact that other people in the world see things rather differently. Now, I've given just one example, but psychological conditioning is of very many different kinds. We have, in fact, gone into this before in some detail. We're psychologically conditioned by our race and by our class. We're psychologically conditioned by the kind of work that we do. Just think of it. You do the same kind of work in many cases, so many hours a day, so many days a week, so many weeks a year, so many years of your life. You are psychologically conditioned by this. You start seeing things in a special way from the standpoint of your employment, your profession, your occupation, your vocation. We're psychologically conditioned by the social and economic system of which we are a part. Socially and economically speaking, we're little tiny cogs in a gigantic machine. And the cog, of course, is geared to the machine. we're psychologically conditioned by that. We're psychologically conditioned by the religion into which we are born, or in which we've been brought up. A few weeks ago I conducted a seminar up in Birmingham, and I remember that during the question and answer period, a discussion turned upon the question of guilt, and how guilt resulted from an Orthodox Christian bringing up. And just as a matter of interest, I called upon members of the audience just to say if they felt that their Christian upbringing, if they had had one, had instilled into them a sense of guilt, and whether that had had an unhappy effect upon their lives as a whole. And three women spoke up at once, three rather elderly women, and they all said that this sense of guilt had been instilled into them when they were young. They'd been psychologically conditioned to feel guilty, and that this had remained with them all their lives and had been the source of much unhappiness and even misery and suffering in their lives. So this is what one means by psychological conditioning arising out of even the religion into which one is born, or in which one is brought up. So what does all this go to show? All this goes to show that we are, in fact, just a mass of psychological conditionings. We're a class conditioning, plus an economic conditioning, plus a religious conditioning, and a national conditioning, and a linguistic conditioning. We're conditioned in this way, psychologically conditioned in this way. There's very little, in fact, that is really ours, that is really our own. There is very little in us and in our lives, in our experience, that is really free, that's really spontaneous, that is really, in a word, us. For the most part, we think, and we even feel, and we certainly act in certain ways because we've been conditioned to do so. For the most part, we're no better than Pavlov's dogs. Huh? A bell rings, we react, we respond. Huh? And bells are ringing all the time. Economic bells, social bells, political bells, religious bells. The bells go on ringing and ringing, and we're responding like mad to all of these, and that we call our freedom. And this is the situation. So we may say that really, truly, we are machines rather than human beings. So we have to break through all these conditionings. We have to shatter, we have to smash, if you like, our own mechanicalness. Otherwise, there's no Buddhahood, not even, in fact, any real spiritual life. Now, this kind of breaking through, this breaking through the barrier, breaking through the obstacle of psychological conditionings, means a sort of dissociation, a sort of de-identification of ourselves, a dissociation of ourselves from that part of us which is machine-like, if you like. The spiritual person, we may say, will not think of himself as an Englishman. Even when he sees the Union Jack waving in the breeze, red, white and blue, he won't experience any special emotion. He'll just think, well, that's the Union Jack, it's the flag of this country, fine. But he won't experience that sort of upsurge of emotion when he sees the Union Jack, whereas on the other hand, the Stars and Stripes, huh? Or the hammer and sickle will leave him quite cold. So he won't feel and he won't act as an Englishman. He won't think of himself as, these of course are becoming rather outmoded terms, but we become more subtle and we've no new more subtle terms to replace the old ones. He won't think of himself as, say, working class or middle class or any other class. Won't think of himself as a townsman, even though he lives in the town, or as a countryman, even though he lives or doesn't live in the country. Won't think of himself as essentially being a doctor or a bus conductor or a housewife, and therefore will not think or feel or act out of any such conditioning. He'll act on the other hand, or she will act on the other hand, freely, spontaneously, creatively, out of the depths, if you like, of pure, clear awareness. Such a person eventually won't even think of himself as a human being, not even as a human being. If such a person, if such a spiritual person, or one might even say transcendental person, thinks at all, which is doubtful, he'll think of himself as Buddha and will act as Buddha, because he or she will have broken through all psychological conditionings, will have broken through into Buddhahood.